My guest at this time is Richard Miniter. He's a longtime investigative reporter. He's the author of many books, including Losing Bin Laden, Disinformation, and Eyes on Target. He is also CEO at the American Media Institute. He joins us now to discuss Tuesday's deadly terrorist attacks in Brussels, Belgium. And Rich, thanks very much for being with us.
Greg, thanks for having me on.
Well, we certainly heard about the major explosions at the Brussels airport and then at the subway system. You put out a column very early this morning suggesting this was not just an attack on Belgium, but a direct threat and a direct message to the United States. Explain why.
Absolutely. I don't think it was any accident that the bombers chose to blow up the American Airlines check-in desk. And not only that, but they chose the three American Airlines check-in desks, they chose the one closest to the Starbucks. So they were trying to kill Americans, not just Europeans.
Now, ISIS has a claimed responsibility for this. So what does that tell us about their reach in Europe? We know there's obviously been a huge migration of Muslims to the continent in recent years, but ISIS being a relatively formed or at least revamped organization in the past few years, what is their reach exactly in your estimation?
Well, their reach is vast, according to European intelligence and police estimates. Some 700 people connected to ISIS one way or another, either as recruiters, fundraisers, so on, who are under constant surveillance by the French, the Italians, the Belgians, the Luxembourgers, or the Germans for, you know, being suspected mostly of moving money. But, of course, the Paris attacks last November were carried out by ISIS, and one of the leaders of that attack who survived fled and was arrested 4 days ago in a Brussels suburb. And so today's attack may well be in retaliation for that police arrest of that person.
Rich, from what we talked about at the beginning with the message to Americans, do you believe the ISIS intent at this point is to target Americans in Europe and elsewhere abroad, or are they moving towards our own shores as well?
I think they're coming. I think they're moving increasingly toward America as well. I think they've seen the San Bernardino attack, which has not been connected with ISIS, but they certainly have observed it through our media and learned from it and realized that those kind of there are a lot of soft targets in America, not just public schools, but also shopping malls and other unguarded, unpatrolled areas. And they see a target-rich environment in the United States. I think this attack in Brussels, by the way, was also a message to the White House. If you step up air attacks and ground attacks against ISIS in Iraq and Syria, we will retaliate with terrorist attacks like this one and bring down your presidency, Mr. Obama. So I think this has certainly gotten the attention of policymakers.
What about the Obama response today? He gave it at the beginning of an important speech he was giving down in Cuba. Some criticized it for being brief. Others accused him of essentially just saying the exact same thing he said before and not with a ton of passion. Others suggest, what else can you say other than that we condemn this attack? We want to work with everyone to eradicate this from the globe. What did you make of how he handled it today?
There's two things in his speech that really stood out to me. One was he called for unity in the face of terror, and which is really the wrong prescription, right? It's not, terrorism is not occurring. People are not suffering terrorist attacks because the world lacks unity. I mean, I guess at the end of time in heaven, we'll all be unified, but human nature divides people, and that's an aspect of human nature that can't be changed. So the idea that the solution to terrorism is unity is a bizarre, theoretical, abstract way of dealing with a very real-world problem. The other thing that stood out to me is that Obama says he wants to bring the perpetrators to justice, which suggests to me that he means a civilian trial, either in the United States or in a European country, where people would have the terrorists would have defense attorneys and rights to cross-examine, rights to exclude evidence, and all of the other usual criminal protections. It would be far stronger if the president had said that they will go to the ends of the earth and kill or capture those responsible. Now, those were the words of George Bush, and those are not the words of Barack Obama. We've seen a different philosophical change from the Bush years to the Obama years, and that has had a different result in the world. As a result of the Obama foreign policy, we now see that Syria has collapsed. More than 3 million people have fled. Human rights abuses have occurred. ISIS has risen from a small faction of al-Qaeda in Iraq to a deadly global force. And the world has become much more dangerous for Americans with the Obama approach.
Let's talk about the reaction of some of the presidential candidates now, the front runners specifically. Donald Trump says we need to stop immigration to the United States until we can figure out what's going on. Hillary Clinton says that's not the way a democratic society works, so under no circumstances are we going to put a halt to immigration. What do you make of those reactions?
Well, I think it's very hard to stop all immigration just as a practical legal matter, because a lot of passports, especially from European countries, do not list a person's religion on the passport. So how would you know necessarily whether someone is a Muslim convert or not? It's probably unconstitutional to exclude people solely on the basis of religion. But there are particular areas where it might be easier. There is a religious visa. There's a visa that's out there for clerics of any religion to come and visit or study in the United States. And those visas overwhelmingly go to Muslims, not to Christians who are, you know, say, pastors in Turkey or Israel who want to come and study in the United States or even retire here. Those are not the people who get those visas. So if you refocused religious visas on people who are represent religious groups that are being persecuted in their native lands, I think that might pass constitutional muster. But if Mr. Trump thinks he's going to be able to close the border to all Muslims, there's no way to do that under American law.
It seemed like he was suggesting today, and I could be wrong because he wasn't super specific about it, but he was seemed to be calling for a complete halt to immigration, not just for Muslims, but for anybody.
Well, America has had immigration pauses before in its history. It's been a long time, but I think you have to go back to the early days of World War II. But it's certainly at a country's discretion whether or not to to grant access to its interior. You know, we could put a temporary hold on visas, for example, and so on. But there are so many loopholes in our system. No one considers that student visas, they really don't investigate whether or not the person who's applied for the student visa really is a student and really has enrolled in a college anywhere. College Sheikh Mohammed, the mastermind of the 9/11 attacks, came to the United States on a student visa, as did many of the Al-Qaeda terrorists who were connected to attacks against Americans in the 1990s. And nobody ever investigated to see whether he'd even graduated from high school and what kind of family he came from and did any kind of background check. And, of course, a lot of people with student visas simply disappear and don't go back home. They disappear into the Netherlands. And then there's people who come over on tourist visas who overstay as well. So this whole system nearly needs to be tightened up and reformed. And there's the idea that you can just turn a switch tomorrow and make it stop. It's a much bigger problem than that, unfortunately.
Another issue that's popped up, this one more on the Republican side, is the American role in NATO, which, of course, the most important aspect many times as it relates to NATO is the organization considers an attack on one country, an attack on all of them. Donald Trump, in his speech to AIPAC just a day ago, believes the Americans should have a smaller role, let the other nations pick up more of the tab and take on a greater role. Ted Cruz today slamming that in the wake of the Brussels attack, saying that this needs to be stronger and we need to have American leadership. Especially given the focus of the terrorists on Europe right now, what do you think is the smarter approach?
Well, of course, I think the Ted Cruz approach is better for a bunch of reasons. One is the United States has been complaining, as like Mr. Trump, about the burden of paying for NATO. About two-thirds of every dollar spent to support NATO is spent by the United States. The Europeans contribute very, very little to their own security or defense. And as a result, their military forces are, frankly, a joke. I mean, the Illinois National Guard is bigger than the British Army. The German Coast Guard, only half the boats have radios, and every other month they move the radio to the other boat so they can all share the radios. I think Britain has 1.5 aircraft carriers, if you count a ship that can take helicopters. They really have not made substantial investments. They have in their military. They have it's a jobs program mainly, especially for the French and the Germans. They have very excellent special forces, which have seen, had highly celebrated roles in Iraq and Afghanistan and elsewhere. But outside that, the regular armies of Europe are quite weak and can't be deployed very far from their own borders. It's actually more expensive for the U.S. to deploy a European NATO soldier in Afghanistan than it is just to send someone from America, even though America is much further away. Trump is certainly right that we pay far too much for an alliance that doesn't give us a whole lot. On the other hand, I think Cruz has got the smarter of the two approaches Once we're now stuck with NATO, we've had it for more than 50 years, pulling out suddenly would not accomplish anything except terrorize the Europeans and drive them into the arms of the Russians. And that would be very unwise to turn Western Europe over to Russia. Secondly, there's a lot you can do with an alliance. You can start to demand changes. You can demand immigration changes. You can demand economic changes. You're going to say, look, if we're going to help defend you against terrorism and against Russian aggression, which worries them greatly, then you're going to have to do certain things for us. And that is certainly that kind of give and take the Europeans, I think, were willing to get involved with. They certainly do it in other aspects of their existence. So I think the cruise approach is smarter, more durable, and more importantly, more likely to combat ISIS effectively. Cutting and running, as Mr. Trump wants to do, doesn't really get you anywhere.
Last question, Rich. You said a better response from President Obama would be to say that we were going to hunt down ISIS to the ends of the earth and obliterate them. What's the most effective way of affecting that outcome?
Well, what Bush did is had an intelligence sharing arrangement with, I think, 107 countries, and which, you know, so if a terrorist ran from one country to another, they would supply information back and forth and track him down. And so there are people who were connected in the funding or the planning of 9/11 who were caught in rural Thailand or in the jungles of Malaysia because of all of this cooperation. So you need to reassemble that coalition of intelligence-sharing nations so that there's no place for ISIS to hide. Secondly, you need the military will to strike at their encampments, to kill using Predator Hellfire missiles, to kill their leaders, to incapacitate them. You need to close bank accounts or enclose entire banks, as the Bush people did. Look, we have the playbook. We used it very effectively from 2002 to 2008. What the Obama people have to do is go back to the Bush playbook. I know they got elected saying how wrong Bush was, but Bush was so successful that the issue of terrorism was a bore. Now it's a live issue, and that's because they threw away the playbook and let the tiger out of the cage.
Rich, we'll have to leave it there. Thank you very much, sir, as always, for sharing your expertise.
Thanks, Greg. Always a pleasure.
Richard Miniter, a longtime investigative reporter, author of many books, including Losing Bin Laden, Disinformation, and Eyes on Target. He is CEO of the American Media Institute. I'm Greg Corumbus, reporting for Radio America.